You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello and welcome.
Hello!
To Noise Direction.
Noise Direction!
Music industry podcast where people who spend too much time on punk teach you how to spend too much time on punk. And we talk over each other in the intro.
30 minutes every Monday.
The point being, we have a topic of the day. Scotty, do you want to share our topic?
Yeah, so let's give him a little BTS, a little behind the scenes. So usually about 5 minutes before Maddie sends me the Zoom link to do our podcast, I say, what's the topic? And then he'll write back like two things.
And we're supposed to figure it out. We're supposed to figure it out the night before, but we never do.
At one point, I said I was going to start making notes for the podcast. But since I said that, I've not been privy to what we're going to talk about for more than about 5 minutes before we start running. Such is the nature of the Noise Direction podcast. So what is today's topic? I'm telling you, Maddie wants to talk about merch. We always talk about merch. Why do we always talk about merch? Because merch can be monetized in a way that's subjective for your music, where your t-shirt will always be worth $15, no matter what tech industry comes in or goes or what fads come or go. So merch is really, merch is king.
Merch, uber ellis, yeah. And this is, so today what we wanted to talk about specifically was types of merch that you should be taking advantage of. Because I think that people, and I also want to break down, and I want to do this everything from how many shirt designs to have to all this other shit that people don't really talk about that's extremely important. Okay. So,
and that kind of stuff, my attention will be hanging on with a thread. So I will then interject with horrible merch ideas that will keep things light and entertaining.
Yes, that's our dynamic. So let's just start simple before we get too deep into it, Scotty.
Yeah.
You're a band putting out your first record, starting to play your first shows. How many shirt designs do you want to have?
I think you need one at least, but I think two is good. And I think that there's an unwritten rule, and we've all seen bands do this. And like, for better or worse, like this isn't like a full on diss, because some bands that get ahead of themselves in merch catch up to that merch, like musically or album wise or whatever, but like, don't have more merch than riffs, right? Like if you've got a cassette out, you can probably just have one or two t-shirts, like, and you don't want to like, Maddie might disagree with me here, but it's expensive to stock up on merch. And here's what's really problematic about having a lot of merch when you're still not bringing in that much income, is keeping things stocked. Like a real amateur move is like, you might be like, okay, we need 10 smalls, 10 mediums, 10 larges, 10 XLs and 10 double XLs. Well, what's going to happen here is you're going to sell out of your larges the first day, and the smalls will be around for like 6 months. So not only do you need to know like what you need to order mostly larges, but also if your band's not bringing in that much money and you spread your merch too thin, it's going to be a real pain in the ass, not just for you as a band or whoever's running in the band's running the merch, but also for the people that are going to walk up to the merch table, because chances are the design that you're running out of sizes in is the one that's most in demand. And if the band is not bringing in enough income to keep those all stocked all the time, that's going to be a problem. And that's why I think that you should start small, because if you could have one or two really nice t-shirt designs and have them in stock in all sizes, you're not doing anyone any favors if you hang a t-shirt on the wall that's only available in youth large and 3X. Matthew?
Man, buying shirts in youth large, that's a mistake.
Youth large was a big, it was youth medium used to be a good shirt for women. Like, instead of doing like the girly shirt, like whole different design, I used to do that. Now, a youth large and a small are very close. Like, a youth large is just like a little shorter and wider than a small. It's actually a really strange design. But a youth medium is kind of like a mini t-shirt, and it'll work for your like 100-pound women at a show or 100-pound men. I mean, it's just a, it kind of can make up for not having like a specific woman's cut shirt. And also at merch, be sure to tell women that, because a lot of women will be looking for that ladies cut, and you'll say, no, we only have this t-shirt. It's a good idea to then actually let them hold that youth media. Because then when they hold it up and realize that they could just probably cut the collar off, and it'll work.
Yeah. So let's just break this down. So a couple things. First, I basically agree with you on one or two shirt designs. You know, I think that two is good because it makes it look like there's something going on. I feel like one sometimes feels understated. You know,
okay.
Having two and then three, I kind of always say for tour, you want three. And if like you're really starting to get somewhere in general, like if you have a couple records out, you know, people are coming to your shows, yada, yada, then you want three.
Yeah. Well, then let me,
Just starting out one or two, I agree is a good idea.
And I want to combat what I just said about keeping all the sizes in stock. That's why if you're looking at maybe we have three merch designs, this is where like a hat or something. Like if you have a piece of merch that doesn't need to be broken into five different sizes, like to
I want to get into that in a second. But
okay,
just real fast, Scotty. Can you break down? I'm buying 50 shirts for my punk or metal band. What should my size breakdown be?
So 50, I mean, you want large first, then medium and XL, then double X, then S. So I would probably do, if I was doing 50, I'd do 20 large for sure.
Sure.
A lot of people, this is really surprising. Like what's funny is I don't actually think large is the most popular shirt size that fits people. I think large is the most popular size that people ask for. Like a lot of people surprisingly will wear t-shirts every day of their fucking life and own 50 plus of them and not know what size they wear. As a merch person, you'll be asked before, people will be like, what size do you think I am? And it's like, motherfucker, you wake up and put on a shirt every day. So gets selected the most.
Yeah, but
I've sold larges to people that are obviously smalls and they just don't know. Well, but also, when I was growing up, you could only get a large or XL at a show. I mean, even as late as the 90s, it was like we have L's and XL's.
I just want to say, though, just to that point real fast, like sometimes people ask because they don't know how big your shirts run, right? I am currently wearing the largest M I have ever worn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like literally I'm normally a large, and because, you know, this was actually a really good feeling, was I was like working out a lot and suddenly the mediums were too tight across my chest. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like an adult now. but sometimes people need to know, but I think that your breakdown, 20 larges, maybe like, and then what would you say? Like 13 mediums?
Then you split the mediums and the larges 13 and 12. And then like seriously like five smalls. And then I would actually would be mediums and the extra large.
Medium and the extra.
Yeah, medium and XL. I'll split between 13, 12. Then seriously, like, dude, I'll be like, oh, we got to get 10 smalls. And then you don't. That's like, you need many. Five
yeah. Get like five you smalls.
Five smalls.
And then get five.
Five double or like a couple. The problem with this is just like on the road sometimes it's hard to deal with double X and triple X, but you would be fucking up big time if you don't have them, especially if you're going to places like Los Angeles where A, there's bigger dudes, and B, the style is like that. even in the early 2000s when everybody, when, you know, like I'm a medium, but I would wear a small when a tighter shirt was more fashionable. Even then in LA, everyone wanted an XL or a double XL. Like,
yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So that was an important point from Scotty there. The other
never go to Los Angeles without two X's.
Yes. That's the whole point of this podcast. No. Otherwise, so what I want to get into now is, okay, so.
See, Matt, see what's happening.
Got me all confused.
It's just not that interesting, numbering down the t-shirts.
Yes, I mean, I like numbers, but yes. Okay, no. So what I wanted to talk about next was just non-shirt merch, which is what I want the bulk of this podcast to be. And there's a few approaches here, okay? So one thing I want to talk about that I've had a lot of success with and I want your opinion on is I'm very bullish on the $5 item, you know, because I feel like sometimes you're on tour, there's like eight people at the show, you're talking to someone, they don't want to buy a shirt, they're not going to spend $20. But they will buy a $5 thing, which is why I think it's important to have patches available, but also like beer koozies. Beer koozies do great and they have a similar
I'll take it even farther. Make sure you have the $1 items. If you're not getting items. A punk patch, a punk pin, 1-inch button, and a sticker, those three $1 items, you'll be surprised how much you'll sell from people who aren't interested in buying a t-shirt, don't have a record player, stuff like that. I think that's crucial.
How do you get patches done for under a dollar that you can make money on those?
Oh, not embroidered patches. An embroidered patch would be a $5 to $10 item. I'm talking about a punk patch, and you can just have your screen printer who makes your t-shirts. You can probably put them like 9 up on a piece of fucking cloth. Fabric. Yeah. And so you can get like your local screen printer will do you those for like $3 a sheet, $2-3 a sheet.
Yeah.
If you do them, that's the kind of thing also though, is if you're DIYing some of the screen printing, even if maybe your chops aren't enough to make nice t-shirts for your band, you can probably bust out those one color punk patches too. And then another one that's kind of a stretch is back patches. Because a back patch, like that's like kind of like a bold statement, right? Like, would you like to put my band's logo on your vest, like as the main coming attraction, right? So you might not move a lot of those, but the thing is that you can probably have your t-shirt printer bust out a few of them just of like the t-shirt design on that. And even if you won't sell a lot of them, if you can get one person to fucking make a back patch out of your shit, it's really like a good move. And it's not that much, like you don't have to have 50 back patches made. You can have 5 made of your best t-shirt design. Shit like that.
Yeah. No, I think you're 100% right.
Now I've seen bands go like all the way. My first punk vest was actually a band like had like thrift stored like 20 fucking Levi's jackets and fucking vested them out and like totally hooked them up. So to me, like it was really corny, right? But it was also like a small, like up and coming band. So they were like, it was like a value for me to get a vest from them, even though I replaced all their patches. So like, think about that. Like that's pretty fucking bold and almost a little corny to have like a fully patched out vest available, you know? But I'm the guy who also bought one because I needed a vest.
Yeah. And so this is the next thing I want to transition to is merch with functionality. Specifically, you and I have talked in the past about sunglasses.
Yeah, in the summer, I mean, it's if you're doing festivals in the summer, that's great. But any summer, and also those sunglasses that bands have are so fucking cheap. That's a $5 item.
100%.
Like, and that's how they fly. And then, so like, if you've got a $5 beer koozie, a $5 sunglasses, boom, that's 10 bucks easy. And because people will buy sunglasses, because people don't realize that sunglasses are so cheap too. And they'll be like, oh shit, $5. And it says fucking, you know, punk band on the earpiece or whatever, you know, on the arm.
Yeah. The other part of that, I just, on in terms of merch with functionality, refrigerator magnets I've seen do remarkably well. And also, again, $5 item. And like,
I would, you have sold a refrigerator magnet for $5?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, that seems crazy to me. A refrigerator magnet almost seems like a free item or a dollar, but go on. $5 for a refrigerator magnet.
I mean, that was, I think the band got them for like $2 each, and they were like, okay, let's price it at $5, see what happens.
So they were like those die cut, they were like those die cut dimensional ones?
Yeah.
Because I always say, and I like to remember on our podcast, because I tell people who ask what the podcast is about, I'm always like, well, you don't have to like really be in a band to like get game off our podcast. So since you, and since this is really band geared specific, this episode, also a magnet, I wouldn't have thought of that, Maddie, but it's a great idea. That's like any business with an email with like a URL should have a refrigerator magnet. Like really, like if you're a fucking plumber or a fucking graphic designer, like refrigerator magnets is actually like really dope promo. I don't know if I would always call it merch though.
Yeah, but,
that fucking thing will go on my fridge and it will move with me to another house, to another refrigerator 5 years later. Like if it's cool.
And so I just want to point out, just with how the refrigerator magnet came, I think it was initially via a band called Salem's Bend, and then I did it with a few other bands. But Salem's Bend, I'm pretty sure, got that idea just because it was like one of the free like upsell things they offer you on whatever merch printing sites, right? And so like sometimes when you get those offers, like if you, you know, generally speaking, you want to you don't want to get your merch done from a merch printing site, you know, unless you absolutely have to. Like you generally want to hire a real screen printer.
Yeah, what happens when you go to those places is a lot of times like you can't, like they have like set dimensions and stuff like that for like their print area and stuff like that. So it's like cheaper, but it's like not, you have less control because basically it's a website that's going to send it to a factory in China and then ship it back to you.
But regardless, like when you get like whatever chintzy little offer like that, sometimes in my experience, it's usually worth like giving it a go just to see like, oh, hey, maybe people want refrigerator magnets, you know? And this ties into the final point I want to touch on, which is the crazy unexpected piece of merch.
Okay, and then this is one of those things. Okay, I'm going to tell a story, okay? Let's put ourselves back. It's 10 years ago, okay?
10 years ago, okay. 2011.
Set the whole stage. So 2011. So in the years when I was taking time off from working with Municipal Waste to hang out with my best friends, everybody would make like, that's one thing that's cool about living in California. Like everybody would come out, like Phil came out for some wrestling events and we hung out. Dave Witte came out for some beer events and we hung out. And one time when Ryan came out, we just decided to do a California road trip together. And Joel from Toxic Holocaust was living in Los Angeles at the time. He actually took a job for Century Media for like a year. I don't know if he was doing A&R or something like that. It wasn't actually clear to me what his job was. But Joel was in LA. So we take this road trip down to LA. We're going to see, I can't remember the headliner. I think it was like when Excel first came back. It was maybe their like first show and it was at like the Echoplex or something.
Oh, the Microsoft Office hardcore band?
Yeah, exactly. Microsoft Excel, Adobe Excel. So it was like when they came back and I think that they had like pretty like strong support from like LA scene type stuff or whatever. So we're going. Also, we get down there and we find out that 311 is playing a secret show at like the Roxy next door. And we know, like, this is also when like your cool points, like it was the kind of show that like the three of us, if it was a metal, like I think the metal show next door, like we all got hooked up or whatever. And then we try to go to like the 311 show as like cool metal guys like in LA. And they were like, yeah, go fuck yourself. So that didn't work. And I wish we would actually bought tickets because that would have been absolutely remarkable. So set the stage for this wacky night, right? After the after the Excel show, we go back and I think we stayed at a friend's apartment who lived like in walking distance of that whole little area where all the shows are. Mm-hmm. And we're drinking heavily and we're talking about wacky merch, right? Kind of things get kind of blurry, right? And then I wake up the next morning and my phone, my first iPhone, is filled with like 50 Google searches for custom slap bracelets. Somehow in our conversation, we come up with the slap bracelet, the memory of the slap bracelet, the nostalgia that the slap bracelet had for us.
Yes,
Maddie, you probably don't, you probably don't have, okay. So then the next day we go to one of those like cool Hollywood swap meets or whatever that just like takes over like a whole like acre of LA and you just walk up and down the aisles. It's like the ultimate merch party. And as we're leaving at the very last table on the way out, what do I spot? A slap bracelet, like fucking a message from fucking Ja waiting for me. Holy shit. All this slap bracelet talk. Here's the thing. This is great. I get on the phone. I call Joel. We decide we are going to get ready for this hyperbole. Rethink what music format really means and decide to release a slap bracelet that comes with a download as the piece of music format. We think we are going to revolutionize how people think about music. And I order us 100 yellow goat slap braces. I guess this is what I should put in, because so at this point, Joel has made Toxic Holocaust a band. Like he started like recording with his band members. So it's no longer a solo project, even though couple years later and currently Joel goes back to making Toxic Holocaust a side project. And what Joel ends up doing is when he makes Toxic Holocaust a band, he immediately starts another solo project called Yellow Goat, which kind of probably messaged to him that he should just be doing a solo project to like need that solo project. But anyways, we released the Yellow Goat slap bracelet. Super exciting. You would think somebody, you'd think like a team up of like Joel Grind and Tank Crimes could pretty much sell 100 of anything, right? With the internet. Please, dear listeners, tankcrimes.merchtable.com for $6.66. These are still available 10 years later. We have not sold 100 of them. They come with a download and a square button. So why did I tell this long story that hopefully wasn't too boring? Well, A, I wanted to stop talking about how many larges you should order when you do a t-shirt order. But funny. But B, sometimes a wacky merch idea seems like it's the fucking, like we really like we're full of ourselves on this idea. And 10 years later, I have not sold 100 of them. Hopefully this podcast, hopefully our 10 listeners will each go buy 10 slap bracelets.
We actually have more like about 200 listeners, but thank you guys for listening.
Yes, more than 10. I love all you guys, man. Sell out these slap bracelets. Make me sad that
they're gone. One in two of you buys, well, how many slap bracelets did you sell?
I bet there's probably 20 left out of 100.
Okay,
and
okay.
I probably had 80 to sell. And okay. Probably like 25 of them probably sold on the first day and then they were gone. We definitely thought they were all just going to like sell right away. Okay. Like we thought it was going to be this limited cool merch and they would just be gone.
Okay. So with one in 10 of you goes to
tankcrimes.merchtable.com
and buy a slap bracelet. You can make Scotty feel sad that they're gone, and I can't steal one from Scotty when I see him in a couple months.
Okay, so do you want to know who the slap bracelets were a hit with?
Who were they a hit with?
Kids, the people that they're for. Like, that was what was so funny. Like, we ended up giving him to kids. I think, like, Brian from Nightbird's daughter, like, really loved one. This is like me, like, giving them to gifts for friends when they stay, when their bands stay for tour. Sure. And then the coolest feedback I got about a slap bracelet was Josh from Fucked Up gave one to his daughter. And then the funniest feedback I got was he sent me a text like a month later. The slap bracelets we made have pentagrams on them. And the sweetest thing I've ever heard is Josh's daughter asked him, said, "Daddy, does this have a star on it because we're Jewish?" And he texted me that, and it just was so funny and so fun. And kids say the darndest things. And but
wrong
so
number
the
of points
big,
there.
The biggest fans of my slap bracelet are the children of my friends.
There you go.
But, this okay, slap now, bracelet, by the way, has a catalog number on Tank Crimes. It's a real release. It's a numbered release on
okay,
my label.
I want to just point something out here, okay? Because there is a functional side that I want to talk about real fast, okay? Of having
yeah, it keeps your wrist warm.
No, of having like the exceptional piece of merch, okay? Two exceptional pieces of merch I remember from when I was younger that I'm still talking about today, okay? One. The kings of doing weird merch were Antichrist Demon Corps, who one of the guys owns a print shop, and they'd go on tour and they'd have like a bathrobe and a onesie up for sale, right?
Yeah.
And the idea behind it, and so I always thought that was funny, but then I went on tour with this band Tengger Cavalry, who were doing like Mongolian folk metal. I managed them for a while. And they were one of my first big successes in the music industry, actually. And we had a bunch of like weird Mongolian tchotchkes up for sale, you know, like prayer flags, beads, little bracelets, whatever the fuck, Mongolian tchotchkes, okay? And what I quickly came to realize that Antichrist Demon Corps knew was it doesn't matter.
Which is for listeners who don't know, that's ACXDC.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people know them by that.
Okay.
Than their full name.
Regardless. It doesn't matter if you sell the weird piece of merch. What matters is that the weird piece of merch got someone to the merch stand, and now your merch person can sell to them. You know, initiating the conversation is half the battle, right? Another band who did this really well, Beelzebong. I remember being 17 years old. Beelzebong were selling the gnarliest bong I had ever seen. I had admittedly not seen that many like non-crust bongs when I was 17, but still.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was familiar with like the gravity bong made out of like the 10-gallon jug.
Bucket. The bucket and the 2-liter.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Ours was what was ours named? Like Harold the Destroyer or something. But yeah, like that's what I was familiar with. And, you know, so like that was another one that just got people. Nobody was going to buy this 250-euro bong, but
it brought people over, right? Like,
yeah,
you've done stuff
and
like that on tour.
That was the important thing, right? Is not, oh, can we sell five of these 250-euro bongs? Because you're not going to sell five 250-euro bongs. You know, I mean, maybe you will, but like you probably won't. You know, but you will get people going, wow, that's a really insane bong. Let me talk about.
And here's another thing. Here's another thing that we talk about on the show a lot too, is bringing the real world into virtual world. If you have something cool and funky like that, you're maybe looking at like some like Instagram posts and stuff from fans like, holy shit, I'm down here at fucking Steve and the Jerk show and they got a fucking big rubber dildo. Oh, wicky wacky.
Yeah. Or this is the other thing, is like, if you can come up with some sort of clever merch based on your band name.
Well, so we did, here's a good, I just remembered a cool, I didn't think of this in the 1 minute of preparation I had before we started this podcast, but I just remembered it now, was that VoteSec did a couple really good merch items. First one's really easy, is lighters are super easy. And we spent like the extra like 50 cents per and got a lighter that had a bottle opener on it. And these were like a massive hit. Like they were like flying. Cause like one person walks outside and lights a smoke or opens a beer with it. And the person next to him's like, holy shit, where'd you get that? And it's like, I got it right over there for $3 or whatever, you know? So that was a really good one. But another, this is a good merch item, but we also did it as like a play. So VoteSec is a feminist band, anarchist band. We're very lefty politics. Women in the band, non-binary people in the band. Our first album was called the Castrator album, and it had like the black flag, like shears, but with like a woman's like painted fingernails nails on them. We came up with this great idea, which was a huge hit. We made VoteSec aprons, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like the duality of like this like hardcore band. And then it's like, we're like doing the flip on like women in the kitchen. So we make full aprons. They were a huge hit in two ways. A, they did bring people over to the merch, because like picture like a full apron like spread out on the wall next to the t-shirts, you know? And people really use them. And that's one of those pieces of merch where now like fucking 20 years later, is that like a photo of somebody in their VoteSec apron will show up in our band group chat, which is still active, even though the band's been defunct for years, because one of us will get a text from someone or somewhere or a Facebook message or whatever about someone pulling out their fucking VoteSec apron to make a fucking pie or whatever,
but,
you know?
Yeah, but even like, you know, as I recall, mustard plug, because we have to talk about ska on every episode of this fucking show.
Yes, please. Mustard plug. Mustard plug. It's a plug for your mustard.
No, no. Mustard plug at one point, as I recall, were selling mustard. Like at their
just flat
stand.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just mustard. You know,
just because like that shit's funny.
Yeah, and stuff like that, like, if you have a wacky idea like that, like, don't get, like, caught up in the weeds. Like, they probably just went to fucking Save Mart and bought, or, like, the dollar store and bought fucking 20 things of fucking 99-cent mustard and put a fucking sticker on it, you know? Yeah. And like, boom, I've got...
Oh, fuck, that reminds me of also the other one who did that was way more fucked up. We gotta wrap up this podcast, but was Macabre.
Yeah.
And Macabre... bought a bunch of Chef Boyardee and put their logo on it. And it was something about like ground up human beings.
Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah.
Right. And it was like Chef Macabre.
Well, here's something great about, we've talked about before, is how, you know, people in this scene, we really like to put all our stuff on display. We've talked about before how we put our posters up and our records are out and we have display of everything. That's another thing when you're thinking of like the wacky merch. So like, goddamn, I'm getting on eBay right now. If I had a mustard plug mustard, it would be on like the fucking mantle over my fireplace until I die, right? Like, I'm not gonna squirt it on a fucking hot dog. I'm going to put it next to my record collection with my toys and my cool shit, you know, on display.
Yeah.
Same thing if I had the macabre like human guts fucking, you know, Chef Boyardee.
Yeah. It's the one time you can get me or Scotty to buy a meat product.
Yeah, I would buy. Do you guys have this in vegan?
Human meat. But the point. Okay, I want to just add a final point because we're going over. But this is important. If someone in your band does something interesting and adjacent to the music, sell that too. So Scotty a couple weeks ago talked about selling buttons on tour. I was thinking specifically about my friends in Witch Mountain, who are very, very dear friends of mine, and their drummer, Nate, who I am in a book club with, is also an author. And he's a horror author, and he brings horror books and comics he has written with him on tour to sell.
Yeah, that's
because,
a great one.
Because it ties into like, oh, we're like a thinky-thinky doom metal band, right? And it's like sort of that same idea, and that you want to just bring that over. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, and you got to make, to your point, it does have to make sense, maybe even not with the band, but like, you can't just, it has to be like, you can't like fake an interest, right? Like, that's not going to work. So if you truly care about like a video game or a comic, and then you do it because you want to be able to talk shop with the people that that item matters to, right?
Yeah.
And then you just reminded me of the last piece of wacky merch I'll bring up is actually Sick of It All. Pete from Sick of It All has hair pomade, Pete's pomade that they sell. Now, this would be a really stupid, to me, stupid piece of merch for any other band. But now we're talking about like a, you know, like a punk, a legend guy who literally has like a famous haircut. And then he sells his own pomade that keeps his little like faux hawk up while he's thrashing.
Do you know what's funny is they sell mustache wax at Helvetia in Oslo.
Okay.
Because the owner's wife's dad owns a mustache wax company. I was a little disappointed to find that out. I was like, you know, like here we are. There's a fucking like, you know, like I'm trying to check out. I'm looking at fucking Death Crush signed by all four members of Mayhem, you know. But yeah,
I've never put wax in my mustache. I don't know what that experience is like.
It's a good one. I definitely recommend it. Anyway, this has been the
noise direction.
Yeah, we talk over each other in the outro too.
The outro.
Outro. Bye. Okay, I gotta press stop recording now.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.